a Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you as always. And today we are getting into some, say they're giant signings, but they're pretty big when it comes to the significance of their roles on defense in 2020. Over the weekend, I was recording a podcast on Saturday, getting into the Malcolm Jenkins article that he wrote for the Players Tribune and, you know, how that situation fell apart. But then, instantly after I recorded, the Eagles made two defensive signings that, Gino, I like the value of both of them. They're both one-year deals for players that right now are right in their prime or haven't even entered it yet when it comes to former Chargers linebacker Jatavis Brown and former Broncos safety Will Parks, who a lot of people were expecting the Eagles to sign. He's a native of Philadelphia. The Eagles were rumored to be one of the teams really honing in on bringing in Parks this year. So we'll get into Parks later on, and Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos actually recorded a two-minute segment for us that we're going to play later on in the show.
Oh, that's what his little surprise was for us.
Yeah, Cody, Gino, he really likes Will Parks. He says a lot of Broncos fans and media members alike were saying that this is a really good signing for the Eagles. So that we'll start with Parks, actually, before we get into Jatavis Brown. I mean, this is a guy that it makes sense. You know, he wasn't somebody that was a full-time starter, but it wasn't really because of his performance. He was a role player on that team and made plays when he was on the field. The problem is the Broncos were so good at safety, right? Darian Stewart, they had TJ Ward, Justin Simmons, now one of the best safeties, best young safeties in the league that they are trying to, you know, sign long-term. So with Parks, it was kind of just a numbers game a lot of the time. They like to use him around the formation because they were so solid at safety. So this is a guy that you could play deep. This is a guy you could play around the formation. He also played a lot of corner in Denver. I'm feeling a lot better about the secondary now, safety especially, with Parks, with Jalen Mills, you know, with Darius Slay, Rodney McLeod locked up. I'm feeling better. The Malcolm Jenkins thing, I wish he was still here, but I don't know. I would almost, is it unfair to say that this defense right now, the secondary especially, looking like it's going to be a lot better in 2020?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, on paper, you would have to look at it like that. I know you were a lot more upset about the Malcolm Jenkins thing than I am,
right.
And it's fair. Everybody has their opinion, but to me, on paper right now, from what Jim Schwartz wants to do, I think you're in a much better standpoint from where we were a few weeks ago. And we talked about this idea of, do you go Malcolm Jenkins and maybe bring in some value guys like Trey Boston, or do you bring in that big name corner and then go light at safety? And so far they've taken that avenue. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So far they've taken that route by getting Slay, paying him the big money. You bring back Jalen Mills on a one-year deal that could be worth up to $4 million. It's only like $2 million guaranteed. Rodney McLeod was for $6 million, so that's only $8 right now, and then you pay Will Parks close to $4 million. You're paying around $12 million to what you would have maybe had to pay Malcolm Jenkins if he were to stay here, because if he wanted more money from Philadelphia, and rightfully so. But right now, to me, from a versatility standpoint, you have what you want on paper, and you kind of see the trend that this defense is going to and what they're going to be and their identity next year in the secondary.
Yeah, look, the defensive line, too, going to be way better next year just based on they're going to be healthier. You bring back Malik Jackson. You sign Javon Hargrave. Not sure still about linebacker. We will get into that Jatavis Brown signing shortly. But even without Jenkins, again, I think the secondary looks to be in a lot better shape because, of course, number one, you have your CB1 and Darius Slay. And I think it's just addition by subtraction when you remove Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby from the outside. I think that instantly now, I mean, with Slay covering the top receiver every game, it's going to make life a lot easier for your CB2. And honestly, I think even if they don't draft one high, even if they don't sign another free agent, if that's Sidney Jones, if that's Avante Maddox, I think they're going to be much improved in 2020. And again, at safety specifically now, Gino, I think one of the big takeaways from this Will Parks signing is – it doesn't even really have to do with Parks. It's just now you don't have to have a guy like Marcus Epps getting so many significant snaps as your deep safety, because you use three safeties so much. And last year, when you got rid of Anderson Dejo to preserve that compensatory pick, you went with Marcus Epps. And again, he was part of the reason your season ended against Seattle. So I think that's one thing, is Parks over Epps is such a significant upgrade.
Not even just that, but in terms of who started in your three safety roles last year as opposed to right now, I mean, right. You take out Sendejo. I mean, you already have upgraded over that with bringing in Will Parks. You still have Rodney McLeod, and the guy that you're going to look to replace is Malcolm Jenkins, and you're going to do that by a multitude of different facets, by going with Jalen Mills, for example, who I believe can fit that role very well.
Yep.
Lou, me and you were both big proponents of his tackling ability down by the line of scrimmage, so mm-hmm. I'm firmly a believer that if he puts 5 to 10 pounds of more muscle on, and he can really use his now what will be speed at that position, because he is now going to be quicker as opposed to other players at that role, but he's going to be a guy that you can rely on in coverage, and now you just have much more versatility to do what you want to do. It was really like you, when you had Malcolm out there and you had Rodney out there, you kind of like were pigeonholed to a degree, because you knew that Rodney had to play, he had to play back, he had to play off the line of scrimmage, and Malcolm was going to be down being almost this roving linebacker type. So now I believe you can do a lot more things. You can interchange Will Parks and Rodney McLeod on coverage. You could throw Jalen Mills out on there in coverage if you want to. If Jalen Mills, you believe that he can play from a single high ability and a rolling safety type role over to your CB2 side, or even Rodney McLeod, you have that ability. You just have a lot more looks that you can throw at teams now from what you had last year, in my opinion.
And I don't want to say that this means they're not going to draft a safety early. I think this just gives them more optionality that you bring in Parks. You're okay now if, let's say, you know, guys like Antoine Winfield Jr., Ashton Davis, I don't know, Kyle Duggar, Jeremy Chinn, they don't fall to the picks that you want to take them at. You're going to be okay now, where next year you can roll in with McLeod, Mills, and Parks. And like you said, you can use them in various ways. And I think that's huge. But also, this doesn't mean that they couldn't take, let's say, Grant Delpit in the first round, or let's say he fell to the second round at a certain spot and you wanted to move up to go grab Grant Delpit or Xavier McKinney. Like, that, this doesn't remove those options from the draft, because, as we said, Jalen Mills only on a 1-year contract, Will Parks only on a 1-year contract, Rodney McLeod 2-year deal only worth $6 million annually. So I could see them, Gino, you love Kyle Duggar, and let's just say this is a player that,
to say the least,
he's a linebacker slash safety hybrid right now that I think is eventually going to develop into a really good safety. But right now, he's a guy that comes downhill so explosive. I like the idea almost of, in the second round, you bring in Kyle Duggar. You let him play that role in 2020 where he's almost playing more linebacker than safety. You use Parks, McLeod, and Mills at safety this year. And then, you know, you see how Duggar developed, and going into 2020, you can then make a decision on, you know, Mills as a free agent, on Parks as a free agent. So even like stuff like that, I don't think is off the table just because you brought in Parks.
Yeah, that goes into the versatility element, because you still now have this degree of, okay, I can pick what kind of safety I want to play in my system. And
right.
I think not as many people are looking at Duggar as a single high safety, but I saw his straight line speed and his ability to get sideline to sideline.
Oh, he can get
and
sideline to sideline, yeah.
I firmly absolutely believe he can be a one high safety, and he's not just that linebacker type, but man, you go and get Jeremy Chinn or get the blazing track speed of Ashton Davis into your defense.
Sure.
And I have no reason to believe that they won't go out and get a DB high in this class from everything that we are hearing. I'm really liking the direction they're taking, and they're doing it with options that aren't breaking the bank outside of Darius Slay, which was a necessity, but at safety. Like, you aren't going to have to overpay Malcolm Jenkins at 32 years old and hope and cross your fingers that you have somebody to replace him in a couple years. I really think bringing in Parks as a low-cost option, seeing what Jalen can do at that safety position. I believe you're bringing in guys that are very, very low risk with very, very high rewards if things go right.
All right, let's hear from Cody Rourke now of Locked On Broncos. Denver, they were really big fans of Will Parks over there. Let's send it to Cody Rourke right here on Locked On Eagles.
Hey, Eagles fans, this is Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos. I want to take a few moments here to tell you guys about the newest addition to that Eagles defense, and that's Will Parks. And I tell you what, this one stings a little bit because Will Parks was such a big fan favorite here in Denver. What he was able to do in his career, he was a promising player for this team. Now, he really came into his own in 2019. When he came in, he had a big play against the New Orleans Saints. Justin Simmons blocked an extra point. Will Parks picked it up, returned it all the way down the field for a two-point conversion. This would help the Broncos win that game against Drew Brees and the Saints. It was a spectacular game back in 2016. From that point on, he's been kind of a role player on this Broncos defense. You've had guys like TJ Ward, Darian Stewart ahead of him, and then Justin Simmons rose to stardom in the National Football League, a young rising star. But in 2019, Will Parks came into a shell of his own as a guy that there was a lot of expectations on. He came in as an instant starter in the sub package for Vic Fangio's defense. They loved the way that they could utilize him in certain looks. He could be a high safety. He could be down in the box playing. He could be a dime linebacker, and then he finished off the 2019 season for the Denver Broncos by playing in the nickel slot, and he did a really good job covering tight ends and some of the tougher options that the Broncos had to face down the stretch, and obviously helped them to a 4-1 season finish. So bummer that he's leaving the Denver Broncos, but excited for him because I know how much Philadelphia means to him. And if you guys live in Philadelphia, you know exactly who Will Parks is and what he means to the community. He's constantly going back and forth. He hosts a summer camp. He's going to have a second annual summer camp here this June. He just held the DB Summit with Philadelphia's top five defensive backs in the high school ranks, and he does something that gives back to these young men, and he's a big advocate against gun violence inside Philadelphia. That's his foundation, Philadelphia Ceasefire. He lost his uncle tragically to gun violence, but you know, if you guys know who Will Parks is, and you guys know his story, but I'm telling you this, he's going to be a phenomenal pickup. He was offered $3 million guaranteed by the Minnesota Vikings. He was offered by the Houston Texans and the Detroit Lions, more money than what Philadelphia gave him. He chose to stay home to gamble on himself, and look, I think it's a great opportunity for Will. In my moments of interacting with Will, I mean, he'd be on Locked On Broncos every week for his own segment, Keeping It Will, and he's just a phenomenal human being on and off the field. So you guys are getting an all-pro all across the board, ladies and gentlemen. So take care of Will Parks, and look forward to watching him from a Broncos perspective on the outside. I think he's going to do massive things for this Philadelphia Eagles team as a promising young rising star.
All right, guys, we are back wrapping up segment one here. Some really good stuff there from Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos. Really a big fan of Will Parks. And again, he even mentioned it, I think. Because Denver didn't use him as a full-time starter really doesn't mean he can't develop into that for Philadelphia. They were, you know, really good at safety in Denver for a very long time. So I'm very excited about bringing in Will Parks. Again, a one-year deal, a lot of value, and he's such a loud, fun, competitive personality, and I think you're adding a lot of that to the secondary, and that's good. That confidence, even Malcolm Jenkins, who now is not in Philadelphia anymore, last year mentioned that confidence thing, probably talking about Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones, saying how important it is for young players to have that. You know, you got Parks, Jalen Mills, Darius Slay. There's a lot of loud personalities now on this defense, and I think that's a good thing.
100%. And hey, man, Sidney Jones is not dead yet. Our good friend Mike Kay at NJ.com said that he was told that cornerback Sidney Jones is working with a notable DV developer and trainer, Ronnie Braxton, in Texas this offseason. And Braxton is known to have worked with Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, AJ Boye, and Bradley Roby. And most recently, Will Parks. So there is some connection there. There is a little bit of evidence that he has helped out. So maybe Sid just needed a little fine tuning and you have him in your building. And it looks like Rasul's going to find his way out the door. But now you still have a. it stinks, man. I know. But
your
even
brand
if you
is
bring
alive
in,
still and mine is slowly dying.
My brand is thriving. My friend, look around the league right now. Juan Thornhill is going to come back strong. Nasir Adderley is going to be an essential element for the Chargers going forward. The Camilleri brand's going strong right now. But besides the fact, you now don't really back yourself into the corner of what you're going to pick at 21. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a lot about the draft. One thing I don't think you're going to see Howie Roseman do is force a pick for receiver at 21. But I firmly believe that if there is a very good player there at cornerback or safety or even defensive end, that he would do that over reaching for one of the receivers outside of the big three. Because if a guy like Chiazon is there, if Delpit is there, I mean, if you even want to go with any of the LSU guys, Fulton, there's the selection goes on and on, or even trade back in that area, because I believe with teams needing help on offense, both at receiver, both at quarterback, that teams are going to reach up into that area to try and get a guy that's going to be a game changer, and some defensive players are going to fall. And we've seen it time and time again. And last year, the Eagles land Andre freaking Dillard, and who knows what they're going to get this year. I think they're in a prime category to do a lot of things, and we'll stick on versatility and be versatile in what they do in the first round.
Yeah, and you know, linebacker here too, Gino, let's get into that, because the Eagles brought in former Chargers linebacker Jatavis Brown to a one-year deal. That's another position that, I mean, for me, at 21, I would love to go with a Patrick Queen out of LSU if he fell. I just, everything, again, that we've heard inside about their linebacker philosophy, based on what they're doing, is kind of, it's been proven to be right. They bring in a guy like Jatavis Brown, a one-year deal, a really young player that, I don't know, Gino, this screams like a low-risk, high-reward signing. It's a high-ceiling player, but also a low-floor player as well. He's explosive, you know, 4.4 speed. He's really good in coverage. He actually had in 2018, when he was a full-time starter with the Chargers, by the way, a defense that, you know, loves to play three safeties, three corners. Like, it's a hybrid defense for sure. And Jatavis Brown was a featured linebacker on that defense. He had the most coverage snaps of any Chargers linebacker in 2018, when he also had almost 100 tackles. So this is a guy that, too, back at college at Akron, was a safety/linebacker hybrid. But last year, he kind of played his way out of the starting lineup. He missed 16 pretty bad tackles. So I don't know. I'm excited about the prospects of Jatavis Brown. I think you throw him in there now, he can compete with TJ Edwards and Nate Geary. I just wonder, you know, is this the three you're going to go with? Is there a every down linebacker in the future here that they can add? I wonder what their plan is at linebacker, if there's any bigger plan here, or if it's just now, hey, draft another guy day two or day three to compete with these three young guys you got in house now.
So to me, I mean, you said it best that this is very low risk. I mean, he's not even making $1 million.
No.
But to me, one thing that was funny I saw on Twitter, somebody said that this is your yearly Corey Nelson, LJ Fort signing, and it was kind of funny. But I do believe that this team has a bigger plan for Jatavis Brown, because
LJ Fort was good last year for Baltimore, so we can't even say like that's a bad thing.
We're not gonna talk about that.
I know.
They should still be paying LJ Fort, for that matter.
It would be nice right now to have him in house.
It would. But right now, to me, he's gonna be a guy that fills that Kamu role. He's a very undersized linebacker, but he has that lightning fast speed. He played 50% of the special team snaps last year for the Chargers. They just lost their special teams captain. I mean, people should be making a pretty big deal about that. Like, that is not something that slips under the radar. Losing Kamu is huge, and they really need a special teams ace at the linebacker position. So maybe Jatavis Brown was brought in to do that. We'll see when we get closer to training camp. But right now you have a lot of guys that are in the same type of role in that special team/fringe starter with Singleton. I think the team likes TJ Edwards. I really believe that they do, because they weren't really throwing around too many snaps to young players all that much last year. I mean, they were refusing to put Sid and they were refusing to put Rasul in, but they did give TJ Edwards snaps when it mattered. I don't know what they're going to do. I know Nate Geary probably is going to play, unfortunately, but to me, I still think there's some guys you could go out there and sign. Maybe they bring back Bradham on like a cheap deal. Who knows? Maybe you bring in a guy like Josh Bynes. I'm a fan of him. Or, I mean, don't discount this draft class, Lou, because right now the mold of these linebackers coming out really is starting to fit what the next generation of the NFL is. And you talk like, oh, I don't want to just get stuck with a day two guy. But I think there are guys on day two, like you look at like a Willie Gay or like a Logan Wilson or a Troy Dye, that seriously could come in here and be playing from day one, that fit into this modern day NFL, is these versatile players that can cover very well, and both are pretty good at the point of attack. And don't discount that they hit on linebacker, because they did it a couple years ago with Jordan Hicks. We've seen the success there. So I know they don't put a lot of stock into it. So day two, to me, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think with Jatavis Brown, with Will Parks, these again, low risk, high reward signings on, you know, short-term prove-it deals. But these are guys, though, too, Gino, I like these kind of deals is a Howie Roseman special. But over the past couple of years, it's been for players that are in their, you know, 30s, right? Where now I really like that their prove it deals for guys that flashed a little bit in certain roles on defense, but now you give them an opportunity, a window here where they can become much more in this Eagles defense. So I think that's pretty exciting, bringing in Will Parks and Jatavis Brown. We got to hit a break right here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, we will get into the Rasul Douglas trade rumors, and also Nelson Aguilar is headed to the Las Vegas Raiders. So a couple other guys from that Super Bowl 52 core could be moving on from the Eagles one, and Aguilar already has. This is Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri back right here on Locked On Eagles. Gino, we got a couple things here to get into still. Let's start with Rasul Douglas potentially being shopped, reports from Pro Football Talk, and now, you know, the masses of Philadelphia media picking up on it. We mentioned Sidney Jones and how things could be looking up for Sid and your brand next year at the cornerback position. As for me, with Rasul Douglas potentially being shopped here, devastating news as the leader of the Zool Hive, but also
ship's going down, my friend.
The ship's going
it's
down.
It's sinking. The Titanic is sinking. Get on the boat.
The captain's got to I'm staying with this ship. I got to let it. If it's going to sink, I'm going down with it. But it's expected news. I don't think this is something that is really surprising, even to me as somebody that really is a fan of the strengths of Rasul Douglas. Again, it's not surprising because Jim Schwartz just, he never, even when Rasul had some legitimate runs, you know, you look at the stretch of 2018, that playoff run, the last month and a half of the season, he was playing some really high-level cornerback. The beginning of 2019, even really, you look at from the Atlanta game, you look at the game against New York, even against Green Bay, I thought he played really well against Devontae Adams on Thursday Night Football. But it's understandable why they weren't willing to commit to him, because he's so limited down the field, especially if he doesn't have safety help over top. If you don't let him grapple at the line of scrimmage or play, you know, 10 yards off the ball, he can be a legitimate liability for you. However, I feel like a team like, I don't know, we'll talk about it. You actually had some good ideas on Twitter about maybe being a player for player trade here, where you send Rasul Douglas somewhere and you grab another prove it type of player on offense or defense. I think a team would like Rasul Douglas. This is a guy, again, lengthy, physical hitter, incredible ball hawk ability for a guy that size. And if you know how to use him the right way, Jim Schwartz never, he again has a certain way he wants to use his corners. Rasul Douglas just never fit that mold. But if a team wants to, you know, use him as a role player, I think there's ways to really have Rasul Douglas help your defense.
I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, in here in Philly, he just doesn't fit what Schwartz wants to do.
No.
He's definitely a change of scenery guy, and we've seen this type of player-for-player trade happen many a times. I mean, to me, right now, I'm looking at some teams that have depth at wide receiver, some guys that are speed wideouts that maybe you're still on rookie contracts, that their teams are not in favor of them. I'm primarily looking to the West Coast and San Fran and Dante Pettis, and right here in Buffalo for Robert Foster. I knew that's what you were getting at when you mentioned the Twitter thing. And to me, both of those players fit what those teams want to do. You look at the mold of cornerback for both Buffalo and San Fran. San Fran, you had Richard Sherman and Weatherspoon there, both 6'1" guys with long rangy arms. Exactly the type of player Rasul Douglas is. Here in Buffalo, you have Trey White. They had Kevin Johnson. They also had Levi Wallace, who were both bigger, lengthier corners, could very well fit into that mold, are on rookie deals. So right now, what they're doing signing these players like Jatavis Brown and Will Parks is they're bringing in young players to see if they fit their mold. They also want to do that via trade, because if you know for a fact that Rasul Douglas isn't in your plans, just cut bait and bring in a guy that maybe he does have an upside that you can get something out of him. Because I would rather get that than a pick at this point, because what are you going to get, like a 6 or maybe a 5 on a good day? I don't know. Maybe, but
yeah.
To me, like, capitalize on a Dante Pettis or a Robert Foster. I'm sure there are other guys out there that I'm missing that are just sitting on teams' rosters that have that long speed.
How about you stay in the NFC?
Curtis Samuel. Curtis Samuel, man. Sure. They lost James Bradbury.
That's something to look at. Also, the Arizona Cardinals just traded for DeAndre Hopkins. Last year, they took, what, 3 receivers in the draft with Andy Isabella. They took Hakeem Butler and Keyshawn Johnson. Maybe I know we want more speed here, so maybe you bring in Johnson or I don't know if they'd be willing to give up Isabella. I would be, I mean, because they do have Hopkins, Fitzgerald,
actually,
and
I think it was
Christian
on the
Kirk.
Draft Dudes podcast that they heard yeah. that Isabella was out of favor in Arizona. So I don't know.
That, that's, Gino, is something I mean, coming out of UMass, that kid, what, ran nearly a 4.3 at his pro day? And last year you saw it on the one big play, a couple big plays he made down the field. That's some legitimate deep speed. So if you want to call up Arizona, maybe there's Keyshawn Johnson, there's Andy Isabella, even Hakeem Butler. I know he's not the type of mold receiver-wise that Philadelphia is looking for right now, but it wouldn't be bad to have an insurance policy as like one of those big targets. And just in case J.J. Arcega-Whiteside doesn't pan out, Hakeem Butler, you remember I was a big fan of a lot of draft Twitter actually was and draft media. Hakeem Butler for a while was ranked, you know, among the top five of that pretty good draft class. I mean, he fell down to the fourth round and he had a season-ending injury, but I don't know. There's some upside there to be had too. So I kind of like the Cardinals as an option too if you want to ship out Rasul Douglas.
Yeah, I definitely think there are teams that like his type of talent, his ball hawk ability. Yeah. I mean, it speaks for his.
There's value in Rasul. Again, absolutely. You're not gonna have to be your CB one or two. No. And it's gotta be the right fit schematic wise. And again, you can't have him be a full-time starter, I think. Or, I mean, you could, but again, it's gotta be the right fit. You gotta have a really good top tier corner. But yeah, I think you're right, man. I think
and
the Eagles actually
help.
Could find some value. Yes. Yeah, safety helper
sure.
as well.
And so, and let's get a good definition going around because I saw somebody refer to Rasul Douglas as a very good safety. I don't know what scale you're looking at, but very good on my scale is like a 6 out of 7. So I don't know about you, but Rasul Douglas, he's a solid player. Don't get me wrong, but very good. That's like for top tier guys like Darius Slay, yeah. almost into the elite category. But he's a guy that he is young. He was a third round pick or yeah, end of the third round, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And he has value because teams want that ability. They want that ball hawk ability. They like his size. If you put him in the right positions, he is not a huge liability in tackling. He likes to get around the ball. He gets his hands around the ball. I mean, he's made some big plays for Philly, but unfortunately, Schwartz just never trusted him. I really think that's what it came down to because you saw the positions and where he kind of lined up, and I don't really think he ever was under the trust tree of Jim Schwartz.
Which is interesting, too, because I feel like I get that I agree. I think that's why Rasul Douglas wasn't able to always stay on the field. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like he lost Schwartz's trust despite Schwartz not even really using him in the right ways. That's, again, my thing is, yeah, there are legitimate liabilities with Rasul. And I think Schwartz's defense really exposed those liabilities, those weaknesses. Whereas if a team, again, says, hey, Rasul, we want you to shadow this big receiver or this tight end, because the Eagles did not have corners shadow guys last year. If you ask Rasul to do that against guys he matches up well with, obviously he's not going to one-on-one on an island do well against Terry McLaurin. But if you
– no,
I remember one of his best games actually was in 2017 when he was filling in for Ronald Darby against the Carolina Panthers. If you ask him to go mano-a-mano with Kelvin Benjamin in the red zone or, you know, Devin Funches, that's something that I think he could thrive with. So, again, there is value to Rasul Douglas's game, and I think because of that, like you mentioned, the Niners, the Bills, maybe the Cardinals would be willing to give up an upside receiver that's maybe fallen out of favor.
You got to call Houston just for shits and giggles.
That's true. Just call up Bill O'Brien. Before you make any trade, Gino, just call up Bill and see what he's willing to give up first, and then proceed with what you're doing. All right, Always. Let's hit another break right here on Locked On Eagles. When we come back, Nelson Agholor signed with the Las Vegas Raiders. We will get into that as we wrap up this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, Eagles fans across the globe, thank you for tuning in to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Gino, the Eagles saying goodbye to another Super Bowl 52 core piece here. Someone that, again, you weren't the biggest fan of. I also, it was hard to be a fan of him in 2019 because of how significantly he regressed when it comes to catching the football, when it comes to tracking the deep ball. He cost the Eagles 2 wins, honestly, if you ask me, against the Patriots and against the Falcons with drops. And it's Nelson Agholor who signed a 1-year contract over the weekend with the Las Vegas Raiders. Man, I think letting him go was the right call for both sides. I don't think last year is what Agholor will be for the remainder of his career because it was so bad. I know there's other examples of that, 2015, 2016, but I think a change of scenery – can help him find that consistency that he had in 2017 and 2018. It wasn't going to be in Philadelphia.
No chance. Yeah, first thing I got to say is, thanks for the Super Bowl. I mean, I'll give him that. But I think people are loving up on him way too much and, like, not calling a spade with Nelson Agholor. Because to me, you know, I always grade players you win with, players you win because of, and players you win in spite of. And to me, he was here for 5 years. Four out of his 5 years in Philadelphia, he was a player that you won in spite of, and he really cost you plenty of games. And I look back to the one game that still literally haunts me, and I feel every bit of rage that Doug Peterson had on the sideline in that Seattle game a couple years back when he couldn't even get freaking lined up on the line of scrimmage the right way.
Yeah, that was
Zach Ertz went for. Ertz went for a touchdown on that play, and it got called back. And he had one good season. If you're going to look at an investment and say you got a 20% rate of return out of 100, like, that's not very good to me. So, yeah, sure. See you later, Nelson. I'll get a comp pick from you. It wasn't going to be in Philadelphia. I mean, he's a great guy in his own right, but to me, it just they should have cut bait last year if we're being serious.
No, I get your side of it. I will say, though, I mean, the 1 year, obviously a first-round pick like him, you did not get enough value. Nearly out of that draft.
Oh, absolutely not.
But I will say, though, I do want to give him props for that Super Bowl run. I think that year, you know, Torrey Smith came in, and he was supposed to be your big explosive target on the outside. Mm-hmm. And I think Agholor actually was the most explosive weapon for Wentz and Foles in that Super Bowl run. And again, yeah, 3.5, I would say, because even 2018, he got hot down the stretch. He had a bunch of 30 plus plays down the field in that year that actually he was among the top tier of that season. But again, he was pretty cold throughout. He got hot at the end. So I'll say like 3.5 seasons of the 5, he really was. He was more of a liability than a strength. However, I'll never forget Agholor for what he did in 2017. I mean, when you have 9 catches in a Super Bowl against the Patriots, 3 of which were huge plays in that game-winning drive, like, you're always going to have a special. Even it's like the same thing with Alshon Jeffrey, Gino. Alshon right now, not in my good graces at all with all of the anonymous source stuff with Carson Wentz. But at the same time, like, that year, I will always, even if I don't see him in a good light right now, that you can't dispel what players did for that championship window. And so that's where I'm kind of at with Agholor too, is like, you disappointed, something that had to be done. At the same time, though, if there was a time that he gave you his best season, it came at a perfect time because it was a season where you won a championship.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like kind of like Torrey Smith. Like, I think Torrey was a good player, but when you needed him to come up big, that was like his best season, I would say. So, yeah, he played well.
Right?
that's what you want in your investments. And I think we got a lot of good play out of a lot of players that had their best seasons, arguably, that year in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
so,
that's true, dude.
Yeah, it really is. But now,
even Wright, Mills, Darby, we got the best Patrick out of that
Robinson,
year. Yeah, Nigel Bradham.
To a degree.
It's pretty crazy, too, dude. Super Bowl 52, I mean, you look at the starters left on both sides now, all they've got on offense, assuming Alshon is going to be gone, Jason Kelce, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson, and Zach Ertz. And then on defense, you got Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Jalen Mills, and Rodney McLeod. I mean, it shows you how quickly things change in the NFL.
That's the NFL, man. You got to have turnover, and you got to do it what fits best for your team. And frankly, they need somebody that can create more from that position. And I need somebody that can give me more yak yardage. I just don't think he was as reliable as you needed out of that role. And outside of 2017, it was tough. But hey, onwards and upwards. Can't hold our heads for too long.
Mm-hmm. I'll say real quick, too, before we wrap up the show, speaking of that, all the turnover that's happened now this year, when we look back and we compare it to the Super Bowl 52 roster, I will say, in fairness, that core it didn't start in 2017, Gino. Like, that core was kind of going since the start of Chip Kelly, right? 2013 is when you brought in Lane Johnson, you brought in Zach Ertz, Fletcher Cox coming into year 2, Brandon Graham getting into his own. So I don't think it's something that, like, is disappointing that it only, because some people, I think, are saying, like, I mean, that goes to show people were talking about a dynasty and it only lasted a couple years. But you got to remember, like, the Eagles didn't draft all those players in 2016 and 2017.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, it takes a while to get there. But that was, like, kind of the last Chip Kelly element to this team, really. I mean,
yeah,
outside of Zach Ertz and Lane Johnson, but now it's Howie's book. It's Howie's book to finish, and
it is.
He has a big offseason to do it the right way.
And again, this window isn't closed. It's just evolving because you still have a huge core from that window still that is still with this team. Again, the players I mentioned, it's not nearly as many as you would have thought in 2020. But look at the names I did mention that are left from that starting lineup. Jason Kelce, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson, and Zach Ertz. Geno, outside of Carson Wentz, aren't those the four most important players on your offense right now?
I'd say so, yeah.
And then on defense, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Jalen Mills, and Rodney McLeod, all pretty valuable. So again, the window isn't closed, but as me and you have said, it's just they're retooling, they're not rebuilding.
Absolutely, and they're doing it the right way from what I've seen so far, and I expect some more moves in the next couple days because a couple markets still have yet to happen. The defensive end market, they're waiting on big names like Jadeveon Clowney to sign. They're still waiting on Breshad Perriman and Robbie Anderson to sign their deals because I think those markets have decreased drastically, so we'll see. I mean, still have a ton of cap space to work with here, especially in this value period of free agency.
Perfect way to wrap up this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Remember, we got 4 to 6 of these in your phone every week, so subscribe on any podcast platform. And, of course, we always post them on LockedOnEagles.com as well. And, of course, me and Gino always talking birds on Twitter after the show, at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. For Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go, birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.